Hello, and welcome to the Doc Talk Podcast. Today marks the fourth ever National Women's Physicians Day, an event that is intended to pay respect to women physicians across the country. It's held each year on February 3rd, which is the birthday of Elizabeth Blackwell. Blackwell, who was born in 1821, would later become the first female medical doctor in the United States in 1858. Though much has changed since then, nationally there are still fewer female doctors than male doctors, which is an issue that is often caused by gender inequality. Dr. Marsha Klein Patel, who is chair of the Allegheny Health Network's Women's Institute, spoke with assistant managing editor Kenny Walter about gender biases in the medical community, representation issues for women and minority groups in both professional and clinical areas, and what could be done to raise awareness and create a more inclusive professional environment. We're so lucky to have Dr. Klein Patel on the show, and it is a great conversation. So let's just get right into it.
Okay, Dr. Klein Patel, my first question is, speaking generally, what discrepancies exist that prevent women from getting ahead in medicine and matriculating through medical school and getting towards the top of administrative positions in medicine?
Yeah, so, you know, big question, right? And, you know, there's been a lot of attention and focus on this recently. We know that there are many gender differences. Women across medicine specialties are paid less than their male counterparts and are less likely to progress along the academic promotions pathway. They're also significantly less likely to be chairs or deans of their programs, with only 18% of chairs or deans in academic programs being women. And they're also less likely to author journal articles. When we look at perceptions of support, men were more likely than women to feel that there were equal opportunities to become faculty and that their department was successful at retaining female faculty. Women are also more likely to report disrespect than men in their workplace, with 70% of women versus 1% of men. When we think about medical school, we're actually doing a good job at enrolling and graduating women at equal rates since about 2003. There does continue to be, of course, underrepresentation for positions of color. But we know that there needs to be continued efforts on how we evaluate and counsel and mentor students. Evaluations for women tend to focus more on their emotional acumen, and for men, more on their cognitive abilities. The one study showed that women were more likely to be inducted to the Gold Humanism Honor Society, but were equally inducted into AOA, our Academic Honor Society. We know that that institutional efforts can help decrease these barriers. And we think about how we counsel women to and what fields that they go into. OBGYN, which is what I am, is one of six fields with more than 50% of female full-time faculty, but they're significantly underrepresented in surgical subspecialties and fields that are more highly compensated.
Okay. Now you addressed this, but you do think we're doing a good job of promoting women in medical school. I mean, more towards like undergrad people, making sure they're enrolling and applying, and we are getting roughly equal
yeah,
rates at the moment.
Roughly equal rates. I mean, you know, sometimes a half a percentage one way or another way for more women than men. Recently has been more women. But, you know, getting there and getting through school, we're getting equally. It's how we counsel them on through their careers that may have some opportunity for improvement.
Okay. Now, when looking at the patient population, how are women currently represented in clinical trials? And if there's a discrepancy here, how do we close this gap in the future to get equal representation in clinical trials?
Yeah, there's actually a wide variety of representation for women in clinical trials, and it's very field dependent. But I think it's important to notice that there's sex biases in clinical trial enrollment for oncology and cardiology, which are the two largest areas for female mortality, as well as decrease in nephrology and hematology trials, among others. women are also more likely to be underrepresented in clinical trials for drugs and supplements and procedures and other interventions. And as we know, we've been really made aware of during COVID, most pregnant women are excluded from clinical trials. And there are, you know, less than 2% of trials are OB-specific trials across the nation. So allocation for resources for female-focused trials and requirements for trials to enroll roughly equal patient numbers as represented by the disease processes would be really important to help close these gaps.
Okay. And then in addition, how are women represented in leading clinical trials?
Yeah. You know, I think similar to, you know, patient enrollment, you know, gender representation varies widely based on the field of medicine, but as a whole actually is understudied. Cardiology and oncology have both taken a look at these in research. And for, you know, one example of a study in cardiology looked at publications and top tier journals with the highest impact factor and showed that no more than 13.9% had fetal female leadership. Female trial leadership varied broadly across oncologic specialties, but overall was about 18% with no field in cancer reaching more than 39%.
Okay. Now, obviously, this is currently a major issue in medicine for both men and women, but do you think more resources are needed to help alleviate burnout issues for women in medicine, particularly after, obviously, a global pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, certainly more resources, certainly more resources are always helpful. And I always think investing in people, and as I say, not stuff, is a better investment. I think each organization, as ours has, needs to deep dive into the causes of burnout for their providers and develop specific strategies around those. We know that actually caring for basics really matters. You know, having adequate resources to like hydration. Many providers walk around dehydrated all day when our masks and our PAPRs and our N95s heightens that. And having access to food and time to eat that food is also really important. We also know that providing time for rest and reflection is important, particularly as we're taking care of, you know, patients with COVID, sometimes other conditions as well throughout the pandemic has been really challenging. And so spending time and providing time for providers to reflect on those challenges can help make work more meaningful. And, you know, this, you know, barriers that we've talked about prior to the pandemic, you know, helping to manage daily workload and streamlining technology and regulations can all help. Efforts at those system levels can be really helpful. And then, you know, as we have focusing programs on physician and provider well-being and how to help the caregiver from crisis are really important.
Okay. Now, with February 4th being National Wear Red Day, do you think cardiovascular issues in particular are underreported, underdiagnosed, underutilized for women?
Yeah. You know, we know that heart disease is the leading cause of death for women, accounting for 1 in 5 female deaths. But there's an underrepresentation of female participants in those clinical trials, as we discussed before, which widens that age gap and sex gap and mortality. Additionally, women are less likely to receive aggressive risk reduction therapy and counseling. And we know that there are non-traditional risk factors that have previously not been accounted for in the development of atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, such as preterm delivery, hypertension in pregnancy, diabetes, breast cancer treatment, and depression. And lastly, diagnosis of acute coronary syndromes for women can be challenging, especially for younger women, as the signs and symptoms that we've traditionally relied on are less predictive for women than for men.
We'd like to thank Dr. Klein Patel for being on the show, and thank you for listening. You can follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook for more, medical news. And we'll be back next week with more episodes of Doc Talk. Until then, stay safe and stay healthy.